anyway, well, thank you for carving out time in the midst of that, because I know you are a big soccer honk, and this is going pretty well so far. So on the Sabres, let's start at the top here with the news of the day, which is some reporting from ESPN's Kevin Weeks indicating that Zach Benson might be on the cusp of a seven-year, $7 million commitment. Joe, I said last hour on the show that I think this has the potential to have the highest approval rating in Sabres contract history. Like, I think the, oh no, but what about blank crowd is just, we all love Zach Benson.
Yeah, it's, what I was thinking about, like, you know, what could Benson sign for? What could the contract be? I said, if you aim to sign him to the same kind of deal Josh Stone got, I'd say that's probably the target. That's probably what you want to do. And this is kind of right in line with that. I mean, it's a little bit more money. It's, you know, it's an extra year. It's whatever. But to me, this is exactly the kind of deal that you're looking for him, because, you know, you can be a pessimist if you want to and see, like, well, 43 points, blah, blah, blah. You know, this guy hasn't scored yet, blah, blah. Like, you can do all that negative Nelly stuff that you want to. And you can have a good time with that if that's what your kick is. But, like, this is an ideal contract for him, because I think the offense, I mean, we saw it in the playoffs, the offense is coming.
Yep.
And we see what he brings outside of, you know, generating chances, being a pest, doing all that stuff. We've seen what else he can do, all the kind of tangible, intangible, you know, driving other teams crazy stuff. That has a lot of value. And, you know, it was the comparison I started thinking of with Benson during the playoffs, and I was like, I got to pump the brakes on it because it's way too high of an expectation. But you saw some of the Marchand stuff coming through last season, playing shorthanded, being very effective shorthanded, being able to generate offense shorthanded, and then also being dynamite 5-on-5, driving play, creating opportunities for whatever line he was on. All of that stuff smacked of what Marchand was when he started breaking through in Boston. And, you know, you don't want to set that expectation for a guy, because Marchand's an incredible player. Everybody hates him, but, like, the guy is awesome. Yeah. Sorry to say to everybody who hates him, the guy's incredible. But Benson, if that's the plane that he's on, boy, oh boy. I mean, you do 7 for 7 every day and you don't even think about it. And if you're Zach, honestly, you say, yeah, no, I'm in. Let's do it.
Yeah, you know, the playoffs, but there's a lot to unpack here. The playoffs really mattered to this. I think Mike and I would have talked about him as an RFA going, you know, before the playoffs happened, and I probably said, you know, bridge deal. I'm not sure where the offense is going to be, and maybe because of that, his side would agree to a bridge deal, because, you know, we don't know really what if I become a 35 to 40 goal scorer or something for you, and I'm probably going to be taking way less than that right now, because, like you said, the points haven't really been there yet, but the playoffs, I think, showed you how effective his style can be, and the value in having, I mean, the Sabres have had players on their team that the opposing fan bases hated, but mostly we're talking about tough guys, right? Like Rob Ray, Barnaby, even, you know, with the tooth and the, you know, Rob with the no jersey and all this. There's guys, but I cannot think of a time when they had a guy that was an important offensive player. No offense to Barnaby, he had some decent scoring years, but somebody that's a top line type player that can play on your power play, that also antagonizes and makes everyone on the other team want to spear him in the nuts. Like, I don't know when the Sabres ever have that guy, and they've got one.
Yeah, and I mean, there were times in recent history where they added a guy where they thought they were going to get something like that. You know, I think of like a guy like Steve Ott. Steve Ott was kind of like that kind of player, and you're thinking big picture with somebody like that, where it's like, oh man, a playoff guy, he'll be a pain in the butt, and he'll be awesome, this will be great, and, you know, obviously none of that stuff worked out. Bad era of the franchise, but like that sort of guy was kind of like what he was, And in Benson's case, like the playoffs were just an awakening for him and for everybody else with this franchise to say, like, oh, this is what he's going to be. Like, because you can watch all the junior highlights. You can see him score a ton. You can see him kind of be a pain, you know, in junior hockey where it's like, okay, everybody's scrapping and fighting in junior hockey. Like, you know, big deal. But from day one, he was driving everybody crazy in the NHL. I mean, you know, we saw all like the kind of crappy penalties. He was getting reputation penalties, you know, 20 games into his career. And we were just kind of like, what the heck, what is going on? Why is this guy, you know, getting flagged for everything here? This is really stupid. And now it's like he's earned that. And now he doesn't get called for that stuff anymore. And he does it even more. So it's, I don't know. Maybe that's just a weird kind of like hockey hazing for officials to be like, hey, buddy, you're not going to do that here until you prove yourself. And then, okay, we'll let you get away with it. But I mean, for a guy like him, though, I mean, 7 for 7, I mean, yeah, your eyes can kind of go like, whoa, that's a lot of money here. Like he's in Tage territory with that kind of money, but also, I don't know. It's a different financial.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Know, landscape
If Tage Thompson is signing a contract this summer, he's getting $12 million a year.
Easily.
Right. I mean, so. Easily. Yeah. It's just a different world now. Right. Yeah.
But I mean, it's, you know, this is a different setup than I think of, you know, and I keep circling back to this because we've been talking about him a lot the last year. But when Alex Tuch got his extension in Vegas, you know, they threw him the extension that he's just coming off of now, Adam, when he was really young and he hadn't really proven himself yet. And, you know, they saw what was coming, but they're like, hey, let's get him locked in quick.
Right, right.
And we'll get this taken care of. And Alex was like, yeah, let's do it. And then 2 years into it, he was like, oh no, what have I done? You know, I'm a 30 goal a year guy now. I'm a guy who should be making $7, $8, $9 million a year. And instead I'm making barely, you know, I'm just making under five, which, I don't know, at 22, 23 years old, somebody throws me a $36 million contract, I'm saying yes. So I get it. But yeah, in this case with Benson, I mean, you're talking about, you know, if you bridge him, you're taking a big chance. Because if you go 2 years with him for, you know, say you go 2 for 12, which is still juicy, you're talking about, well, what am I paying him after 2 years? Am I paying him the same, or am I paying him 10? You know, and you don't want to be paying him 10.
Right. Yeah, it's good. It's good to be proactive. I mean, of course, the downside is that, you know, the player doesn't continue developing and never gets the scoring touch we think is coming, and, you know, you're on the hook. But I think it makes a ton of sense. Joe Yurden, from Bleacher Report on the Wester Hotline with us here on WGR. You mentioned Tuch. Is there any validity to Tuch? You mentioned the previous contract. He's been a bargain here the entire time he's been a Saber, and I guess we never really cared that much until this year when they got good, and then we were faced with the specter of him leaving for nothing because, you know, he's maybe priced himself out. Like, should the Sabres make that up to him by giving him what he wants? Like, is there any room for that kind of sentimentality in this to you?
I don't know. There's the heart. There's what the heart wants and what the head wants. And what the heart wants says yes. Like what he's done for the, you know, what he's gone through, what he's put up with for the franchise, what he's done to help, you know, bring this team together and get him into the postseason, and what he's been as a player here. He's a guy that's worth that money. Unfortunately, you're looking at a situation where the Sabres have under $14 million in cap space. And if you want to bring him back, you're talking about 10 to 11 million of that going to him. And then if you're signing Benson for 7 for 7, well, there goes all that money. And it's hard. It's really hard. And, you know, part of me wondered if there was some, you know, because I think, you know, Alex is going to go to July 1st. He's going to see what's out there, unless somebody, you know, makes a deal to acquire his rights and then sign him on the spot. But, where if he goes to July 1st, sees what's out there, sees what teams are offering, and then if the market isn't to his liking, he says, you know what, forget it. Let's go back to Buffalo. Let's just, you know, we'll take what the offer is. It's not to say comfortable, but like, this is what we know. And if I want to end my career as a Sabre, I can do that. But I don't know, the family considerations, you know, I mean, his wife's from Vancouver, you know, been away from their family. She's been away from her family since, you know, since they've been together. So like, that's hard. Tuck's family knows all about hockey life. They've been in hockey since he was, kid.
Right.
So like they're used to that, but like there's a lot of stuff to consider. There's so much stuff to consider in his shoes, and being 30 years old, there's a lot for teams to consider as well, because, you know, even though he's been so good, you wonder, okay, 30's like that kind of artificial cliff line where you don't know what a player's going to be after that. Tuck could be great until he's 39. He could be great until he's 32. And if you're signing him up and you're going 7-8 years with him, you better hope he's great till he's 39, because you're paying him a ton of money to do it. But it's really hard from Buffalo's perspective. And I just keep going back to how Alex really seemed to bite his tongue in talking about the negotiating with Kevin Adams last summer,
right,
where he just, you know, things didn't work and, you know, they weren't able to get something out. You could just tell Alex was so frustrated looking back on that. And, you know, it's when you can feel that come through in a guy who's trying to bite his tongue on it, that's really tough.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you there. And I bet you probably felt that being in the room present when he was talking, because sometimes it makes a difference to be in the room. Well, from Tuck, if we sort of live with the premise that he's leaving, which is where I think we should be living, who knows, maybe something happens at the 11th hour. And like you said, it's not to his liking and he comes back here and maybe they make a peace here. But if he leaves, that brings us to yesterday's story, which was Bowen Byram perhaps being on the trade market. I think absolutely that is a piece that you're trying to replace Alex Tuck with, I think. I mean, I suppose you could be shopping Bowen Byram in the effort to go trade for Connor Hellebuyck, and that has nothing to do with replacing Alex Tuck. But my guess is you're trying to put a package together to get a player that you think can replace Alex Tuck. How about just the idea of moving Byram for that? Because, Joe, I probably use this phrasing with you. I've used it many, many times. I thought those 4D on this team were their superpower. Kekalainen sounded the same when the season ended. They drive so much of what they do. So breaking that up is going to be hard to swallow, but I think they may have to if they want to suitably replace Tuck with a veteran. What are your thoughts on Byram?
Yeah, they're in a tough spot, and it was kind of funny when Bo said, you know, I thought by signing my deal last summer, I wouldn't have to be talking about this. And I'm like, buddy, you signed a 2-year deal that walks you to free agency. I don't know who told you this was going to be easier, but, you were going to be talking about this next summer. I was like, you got a vacation for 12 months, pal. Like that's what you got. But, it's another tough spot where I think, you know, maybe you wait it out and get to the cap jump next year. And you say like, okay, well, if we're not trading Byram, how much can we get him for? And there is a big problem with that though. Darren Ferris is his agent. We're very familiar with Darren Ferris by this point here in Buffalo. And, you know, he's had some pretty high profile clients here in the past, and they want to go to free agency. Like that's just what it is, unless you completely blow the doors off. And even then, I think Darren would be smart enough to say, well, if they're going to give us this now, what do we got coming to us in the off season? Like, oh, hang on a second. But I think Yarmo's in a spot where you got to be proactive in that case, because if you've got a top four defenseman like Byram and you know he's going to go to July 1st, no matter what offer you make him, no matter what's coming, no matter what you do, if you think he's going to, you know, and that opens the door for him to just walk for, you know, you don't get anything back for him.
Like Tuck,
you got to look around.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You have to look around. And now's the time to do it, because this is your window to get things in line and to get things straightened out so that you can figure that out.
Yeah.
I think, if Byram's your window into getting somebody to replace Tuck, then I think you try to figure that out. If it's, you know, if it's Matthew Nyes, if it's Jerry McCann, you know, if it's somebody like that where you can go out and find somebody that's Tuck-like, and they cost, you know, the same or a fraction of what Alex cost. Great. Awesome. Like, I think you figure that out and you get that done. And then you figure out the defense on the other side of it and try to go from there. Cause I know the temptation to run it back with the same group and just say, okay, boys, just go get them again is very high because they're so good. But you got to think about, as much as it stinks, you got to think about the distant future, not just next season, but you got to think 2 years down the road, because you're thinking, okay, well, if we just say, screw it, we're just going to do this with Byram, we'll run it back next year and see how we go. Great. What do you do in 2 years when he's gone?
For nothing.
You know, who are you getting?
Right.
Who are you adding? Like, how are you figuring that out from there? And it's the same with Tuck. Like, if Tuck walks for nothing, all right, how are you replacing him? You could try to jam all the kids into the lineup and say, all right, well, Yuri Kulik can take over. Well, can he? I don't know. Is he going to be able to play? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Can Zach Benson's offense step up for that? Can Konstantelis' offense jump into that role? You're talking about a team that was already really young and saying, like, well, what if we get younger and
right, which,
try to go even further in the playoffs?
Yeah, that's not usually how it works. Anything can work, but that's usually your cup contender. You're not trying to get younger. You're trying to get more veterans, usually, especially to replace veterans like Tuck. You know, the thing about Byram, I felt kind of like an idiot when I saw the reporting that, you know, the Sabres are taking calls on him or might be interested in moving him, because mm-hmm. I know how Yarmo sounded at the end of the year. Like, he sounded as eager to re-sign Byram to a big extension as he did Benson, but
yeah.
Like, I feel like we're all just so crushed by the loss, I think, still, and just not really seeing the whole playing field. If you were going to pay Byram somewhere between what Power and Dahlin are getting paid, let's say that's got to be his ballpark, you would then have three defensemen under contract in the top 25 in annual average value in the league. And there's not a team in the league that exists that's doing that. So, like, asset management-wise, I think there was certainly room to wonder, is that a good idea, signing him? Then there's the Byram piece, right? I mean, a lot of what people are piecing together now is that he's blocked here. He can't be number one. He's not even on the top pair. He's certainly not on the number one power play, and that's not changing. So, you know, of course he wants to go somewhere where he can do all that and get paid $12 million a year to do it. I mean, I totally get it.
Right.
So from his standpoint, it really makes sense. And I think I just sort of missed all that when the season ended and they talked about wanting to extend him.
And there's a little bit of like self-negotiation that Byram's got to do, because one of the things that he said at the end of the season was, you know, I don't want to lose. You know, I don't want to lose anymore. I'm done losing. Get me on a winning team. I'm on a winning team now, so this is good. And it's like, yeah, that's correct. You know, you're on a winning team. Yeah, things are good. But it's also like, well, all right, that's fine. But you're not supplanting Dahlin as the number one power play guy. Not happening. It took him three quarters of the season to supplant Power as the number two power play guy, which, I know, coaching choice, like, fine, like, whatever. But, like, you know, if you're going to come in at, like, $10 million a year and you're going to do that, it's like, well, you got to be able to – if you're spending $10 million a year on a guy, he's got to be, like, a number one-esque power play guy.
Right.
Like, and Dahlin's that guy. And, you know, if you're Byron, if you don't want to lose anymore, great. Like, you can go to another team, but, like, do they have the money to pay you? You can go to a team that might be on the brink of being a big time winner, which is possible. That's got money to spend, but you know, you got to kind of wait a year or force a trade to that team and then kind of go from there. But, it's an awkward spot for him. It's definitely an awkward spot for Buffalo, because they want to, I'm sure in an ideal world, they want to keep everything the same on the back end, because they're so good and they're just, it works just easily. But it's so difficult. It's so difficult to try to get this done when you're kind of, they're not tight to the cap, but they are. And, you know, and you're thinking down the road and you want to get all this stuff squared away. And it's just, you got to decide, like, which things are we going to pay for? Which things are we not going to pay for? And, you know, unfortunately, some of those decisions have to be made right now, because what you do now is going to affect what happens next year and the years after.
Joe, we got less than a minute here. Is there a big goalie trade out there for you? Do you like the Hellebuyck idea?
I like it in theory. I don't know if I like what it would take to make that happen. Because I think what it would take to make it happen are a lot of guys that I think are going to be big time players in the NHL, whether it's here or it's not. I mean, Hellebuck's an unbelievable player and an incredible competitor. I think it would be awesome. It would be awesome to have in whatever team, certainly here in Buffalo. But giving up man, Mirka, maybe Helenis. You know, I don't care about giving up picks at this point. Like, whatever, just, you know, take the pick. It's fine. Like, giving up guys that might be here in a year or two that you might need to replace guys that might be leaving in a year or two, that's really tough. That's really difficult. And I don't know if Buffalo should be thinking like that now. Although, if they think, like, we can win it next year, if we can win the cup next year, I think you do whatever you can to make it happen, honestly.
Joe, I appreciate you skipping the first, I don't know, 15 minutes or so of the second half. You've not missed any goals, in case you can't see a TV in your quiet spot outside the Banshee. But go enjoy the rest of the soccer. Thanks for the time, and maybe we'll visit again later in the summer.
No, I appreciate it, Bulldog. Thanks so much for having me.
That's our dude, Joe Yurden from Bleacher Report on the Sabres. Team USA continues to lead. Number two, rolling along here on a Friday. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. It's a little cloudy. We're getting through it. It's a little cloudy.
I'm cool with what we've got here today. You know,
yesterday's rain was a bit aggressive.
Yes. Yesterday's wind was a bit aggressive.
Just a tad. But join now, as we were talking a lot of hockey, we've got a lot of news. The NHL got the offseason rolling right away. Bill Hoppe covering the Sabres for the Times Herald. Bill, good morning. I think this is the first time we've ever met.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
The only Zach Jones I know is the guy who played defense for the Amherst this season and earned several recalls to the Sabres, but did not play.
Let me tell you, I wanted him to play. Selfishly, though, kind of didn't. Because then it becomes like, if he scores, I have to mention Zach Jones, and then I feel like I'm talking about myself in the third person.
Right.
I love Zlatan Ibrahimovic on the Fox soccer coverage. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be that. I don't want to talk about myself in the third person. I felt weird about it.
Definitely.
I had to do one update where I mentioned him, and yep. I was like, It's not me. Don't worry.
It's
people spell
me.
Our names differently. Don't
That's
worry.
That's right.
No. If there's a turnover at the blue line, next thing you know, people are hate tweeting at you instead.
Well, and that's the thing. There's so many ways to spell Zach. Like, then I'm getting hate mail, and I'm like, it's not even me, guys. But be nice.
But he won the AHL Norris. He's a very good AHL defenseman. I don't think he'll be back, but he'll play in the NHL again someday.
That's the thing. Konstantelos, like, he was getting a lot of run there, but Jones was leading the team in points. Like,
yeah,
incredible.
Yeah, he was that good. I mean, he's a power play stud. It was very weird though. Early in the year, he was up. He had to have three or four recalls and didn't play a game. But sometimes that's the way it works out.
I mean, I get that. I was also sitting in the same press box as him, so I get it. We're there.
I hear you.
And I mean, it's good to finally get to have Bill Hoppe here on the Wester Hotline to my left. But Bill. Sabres, there's a decent amount going on now. Obviously, the Sabres trading Kesselring, the Bo Byram trade rumors. We could start with the, I guess, quote-unquote, smaller one now when it comes to Kesselring, the move that actually has happened. It's something where everyone knew he wasn't going to sign his RFA deal. It looked like it was just something that, out of bad luck, injuries, not fitting in, a little bit looking like he was in the coach's doghouse.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed like for the Sabres, it's a simple move.
Yeah, it's a simple move, but I mean, one, a year ago when they got him, when he was their big offseason acquisition, I mean, it would have been hard to fathom that they'd be done with him in less than a year. But it didn't work out here. He got hurt his knee in training camp, got behind it, comes back, high ankle sprain, re-injures that, and he never found a groove. Meanwhile, Matthias Samuelsson solidified himself in that top four. Owen Power took more steps. So that top four is rock solid and probably as good as any in the league, really, and if not the best. And he was playing short minutes. He never adjusted to being that fifth, sixth defenseman where you have to just kind of play within yourself, make the most of playing 12, 15 minutes a night. And when they traded for Luke Shen and Logan Stanley, he fell the lineup and never really got back in. And it was one of those things. I think it's best for both sides that they moved on. But like we were just kind of talking about off the air, I mean, Michael Kesselring is 26 years old, right shot. This is a guy that had 29 points the season before with Utah. There's a lot of upside there. I mean, this is a guy they got to play with Owen Power. So with the young Sharks team on the upswing, he could definitely be everything that Kevin Adams thought he would be. I mean, this could be just a blip on the radar for him.
And this is the thing. I mean, he goes to a Sharks team. There was almost a feeling of like he could have gone to much worse places. He's going to a place out west, beautiful. I mean, we talk a lot about hockey players here that they seem to want like four destinations.
Yeah, right.
You either get tax breaks or the sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes there and he gets, you know, I'd argue Celebrini's now a generational talent. I mean, what he is able
seems
to do.
Seems like it, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Right. He's doing this before he turns 21. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's on fire. They have the second overall pick. They may draft Stenberg, who some argue is better than McKenna. It could wind up in worse places. And so it's nice that they were almost able to do good by him, because it just you do almost feel for him in such a high positive season for the Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
Kesselring seems to be the only guy not having a good time, arguably, because just nothing could go right. It's the multiple injuries. It's the fact that he's brought here to go into the top four. Nope, Samuelson completely not even rediscovers himself, but finds a new avenue for himself with the scoring and having the offensive push. And then the guy he's also brought over with from Utah becomes a folk hero like 10 games in.
Right.
And keeps going with Josh Doan.
And with Kesselring, the odd thing was, he told us this probably in October, November. He's like, I've never been hurt before. It's like, mm-hmm. You've never been hurt before. How is that possible? But he apparently had never been injured in his career. And so that just adds to it, that he had never been through something like that. And I think it was tough for him to handle. I think you could see it in his face, hear it in his voice as the season went on, just how difficult it was for him going through this. I mean, you come to a team, you're a big acquisition. You want to make a first impression, and he never found that groove. And like you say, Josh Doan, I mean, I don't think on the inside he was thought of as a throw-in, because we've seen the video where Kevin Adams fought for him. He wouldn't have done the trade without him. So I don't, inside the organization, I don't think he was in any way, shape, or form thought of as just another guy in the deal. Outside, he certainly was. And yeah, and you're right, he had a terrific season. I think just his personality resonated with the teammates, the organization, fans, and he's got that contract extension. He's going to be here a long time. So I mean, in many ways, I mean, the trade is more than worked out.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And now, Bill, I do want to get your thoughts on this, because like for me, when I saw the trade go down, they only moved up from 27 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing who Jarmo Kekäläinen is as a general manager, knowing what they were kind of trying to do with they almost succeeded to do at the deadline. I mean, he wanted to go big game hunting,
swing
for the fences. It's only the 20th overall pick in the NHL draft. It does not have the same aura to it that the NFL draft has. But it does, to me at least, appear to be the move before the move. Is that sort of the feeling you get to it as well?
Yes, for sure. I mean, it's only seven spots, but that picks a heck of a lot nicer at 20 than at 27. And I've been around the team for a long time, and I can't remember ever just the consensus like, yeah, they're going to trade the pick. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like yeah, there's no chance they're going to make that pick. It certainly seems like they're gonna trade it for immediate help, and if you're a Sabres fan, that's exciting. Just to think about what could transpire in the next week or two here, most likely or possibly, just that they package that 20th overall pick, maybe a prospect. I mean, who knows what it entails, and they could get a NHL ready talent here that maybe they believe pushes them over the top, or could push them over the top.
All right, let's see. 8 minutes in, you think it's time? We go on to the thing that we've been kind of back and forth here on.
Because, so Austin Matthews, I'm kidding.
Bill Hoppe joining us here, Times Herald, as well as BuffaloHockeyBeat.com, including one of his latest pieces. Trading Bowen Byram wouldn't make much sense for the Sabres.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Bill, so we obviously know your feelings on, obviously trading Byram doesn't sound ideal. I definitely don't want to do it. The one thing that I'm starting to get worried about is, well, how much influence is the agent playing into this, or the desire to be like the guy,
right?
That Buffalo. Do you think they might not have as much of a choice, despite it being a bad idea?
Possibly, if Bo Byram wants to be a number one somewhere, or wants to be a number one. I mean, it's never going to happen in Buffalo, right?
Right.
As long as Rasmus Dahlin's around, as long as, you know, Owen Power's around, even, you know, throw Samuelson in that mix. I mean, he's never going to be the guy. So if that's something he wants for his career, he's going to have to look elsewhere. Now, that said, it seems like he genuinely likes it here. He has a chance to win a championship here, in my opinion. If you're a legit cup contender or trying to win the cup like the Sabres are, trading Bo and Byram, even if you lose them the next year for nothing, it still just doesn't make a ton of sense to me, because as soon as you trade a guy like Bo Byram, you're looking for a Bo Byram.
Mm-hmm.
And that defense core is the Sabres' greatest strength. I mean, what it does to the team, the way they can attack off the back end, I mean, it just transforms them. And I don't think trading him makes a ton of sense. It really doesn't. And yeah, I realize you could lose him, but I wouldn't do it.
Now, you say that, and I find that interesting of, like, you know, you run the risk of losing him, doesn't matter, hold strong. I do wonder if that becomes a public perception attack of, oh, the Sabres are winning and people are still walking out of the door for nothing. Even with as aggressive as Kekalainen can be, one of the aggressive moves could be staring down the barrel of a UFA ready to walk and not blinking and going, I'm going to use every bit that I can of you as a Buffalo Sabre until we can't do anything about it anymore. Kekalainen has also done that in the past, where he's not scared of playing it out with a UFA and risking losing that player for nothing if it meant getting somewhere into the postseason.
Sure. I think you're referencing Bobrovsky and Panarin.
They trade for Duchesne.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he has a history of this. And, I think that could certainly transpire, where he believes, you know, they're a cup contender and nothing out there by trading Bo Byram could make them better. So he'll just keep them. And if there is a deal out there where, you know, somehow they can improve, so to speak, where you get another solid defenseman, maybe not of Byram's category or talent, and a forward you think can help you that can play in the top six or top nine, you know, maybe you examine it. But I don't know what's out there that's going to be better than Bo Byram. And I'm really pumping up Bo Byram, but I mean, he's a very good defenseman, and I think he gets overshadowed by some of the guys. But if he was your top guy, I mean, you'd really see. I think you'd see a different Bo Byram if he was playing 26 minutes mm-hmm. a night and was cast in a bit of a different role.
Right, like all of a sudden he's the quarterback of the power
sure.
play, and you're seeing ultimately what happens when you're a number one defenseman. Like, you mm-hmm. get all of those, for some luxuries, others it's more responsibilities. I do wonder too, after the news from this morning, Darren Radish, he gets the trade and sign to Toronto,
mm-hmm.
and now he's taken off the board. You know, when you look at free agency, now it really is all Alex Tuch.
He is,
regardless of position, he is the big guy. But now, I've talked about this with Derek here today too. Now, Byram, you're already building him up. Now he might be like the king of the castle, like the best acquisition piece potentially of this offseason. That's where I wonder if you can maybe go back to the drawing board with a team like St. Louis, where, you know, regardless of how close it got close enough that Robert Thomas to Buffalo was getting tweeted out by insiders. It was close enough there. They do get the Colton Parayko deal done. Parayko just has to say yes or no. He ultimately goes no. So I wonder if you're able to go back to the drawing board there with Byram's number one guy. They need a number one defenseman. He wants to be that. And I wanted Matthew Nyes. I think Toronto's probably out on that. But I do think there are enough teams out there, maybe trading way forwards, that need a Byram, that Byram could go to, that it could happen.
Sure. I mean, if Matthew Nyes is available, and I would think maybe he's not anymore.
Right.
With
I think this morning he's done, yeah.
But yeah, if you can get a forward like that, sure. That's something you certainly examine. Trading him within the division, I'm not big on that. I was kind of surprised. Actually, Tampa traded Radish within mm-hmm. the division. But yeah, certainly if there are deals out there that can give the Sabres address a need, that, you know, they maybe get a defenseman back that they can play 18 to 20 minutes a night, I would do it, or I would examine it, excuse me. But on the whole, I just don't think trading Bo makes a ton of sense if you're in go-for-it mode. And the Sabres are certainly in go-for-it mode, as we know.
I wonder where Yarmo's head is at with that. The last 2 days now, like after we get the report from Drager yesterday, I've gone back and just watched Yarmo Kekäläinen. Like, he lights up talking about Byram. Like, you go back to that. Like, when he's talking about Alex Tuch, it's much more subdued. We're kind of acknowledging, like, we really may lose him this offseason. We may not just have room to bring him back. Him talking about Byram, I mean, he glows when he's speaking about him. I honestly, because me and Derek talked about it, like, who would you get done first in this offseason? Like, kind of pushing Tuch a little bit to the side. Zach Benson, who's an RFA, or Bo Byram has another year left, but will be a UFA in a year. I was pushing for Byram because I'm like, I think they adore him. They want to get that done. RFA deal might be much easier to get done. But now looking back, you almost wonder if Kekäläinen or the Sabres themselves didn't know what would happen. And maybe someone like an Owen Power, who has a very good playoff series, not necessarily in terms of points, but he was maybe the most consistent guy throughout the two series, just so good behind the board, behind the net and just clearances, stuff like that, that you almost wonder, because I really do believe in we listened to a Frank Seravalli clip and even Drager said it yesterday, that Byram wants to be a number one guy. I fully believe that. And I wonder for him, not only is Dahlin here, but Power is ascending. Like, mm-hmm. I just can't get it done here. I've got to go somewhere else to do it. And maybe Kekäläinen and the Sabres brass at the time didn't know that he was feeling that way.
Yeah, certainly. And you're right about Yarmo talking about Bo. I went back and read his quote yesterday from the end of season, and he was saying how he believes he has growth. He was just talking about the defenses, you know, as that those top four and what they do to the team, how it's the engine that drives them, I think it was the quote. And he said he'd like to sign Bo. So, I mean, he seems all in on him. He thinks he has more. So, I mean, maybe they go all out for him. Who knows? But like you say, maybe Bo doesn't want that. But like we were saying, if he wants to be a true number one, it's not going to happen here. So that's something like you talk about the Frank Seravalli clip. I mean, that's something that we have to remember here as this offseason goes on, that number one, it's not going to happen here. And I think even, I mean, he's played with Dahlin a lot, but I mean, he's on the second pair. I mean, he which is one heck of a second pair, but I mean, that could play into it too, that he's not even playing on quote unquote the first pair. I mean, so there's a lot of things to consider as this kind of unfolds here.
Bill Hoppe, Times Herald, BuffaloHockeyBeat.com, joining us here on the Wes Herr Hotline in studio. Bill, when it comes to Zach, I find it funny that the answer to our debate between Benson and Byram kind of got answered for us. Like,
now, it totally did.
Byram is kind of taking center focus all of a sudden. But one of the other things that people have wanted to add to is in net. I don't think that it's something they should really be pursuing that much. But, you know, everyone is entitled to their opinions on this. Do you think that the Sabres would or could have a little bit of a shuffle in net, or do you think they roll the same three guys back, at least for this year?
I tend to think they're going to roll the same guys back. I'm sure Yarmo is doing his due diligence. I mean, you hear stuff Connor Hellebuck could be available and this and that, but you know, even a guy like Connor Hellebuck, a future Hall of Famer, in my opinion, I mean, you look at age, money, acquisition cost, I don't think it would be worth it.
Right.
And, you know, you look at Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen and Alex Lyon and even Colton Ellis. I mean, they were a great duo, a great trio. It worked out perfectly more or less last year. And I'm comfortable with running that back. I think there's no reason they can't have the same type of season that they had last year, all three of them. I mean, when you talk about three goalies, I mean, usually it doesn't work out, but it certainly worked out well, and I don't think it'll run that smoothly if they do it again, just with injuries and roster spots. I mean, that's the big thing, roster space. But I do think it's a little different that, you know, you don't have the guy, but I mean, I think it's better than anything else that's out there when you factor in acquisition costs and so forth.
Do you think Devon Levi gets moved this offseason?
Yeah, I do. I don't know what he's worth or where he'll go, but I don't think there's a future for him here. I mean, he was Kevin Adams' acquisition, his guy, the goalie of the future, it felt like. And after 3 years in Rochester, I mean, he wasn't up at all last year. He didn't get one game last year. I don't even think he backed up or anything. I don't think he had the best year in the minors. Not that spending a whole year in the AHL won't benefit him. I think it could, just going through that and the grueling AHL season and playing 50-some games and so forth. But, yeah, I don't think it's going to happen here for him. I mean, he needs waivers this year. I mean, he wouldn't clear waivers, in my opinion, if they did re-sign him and try to keep him in Rochester or get him to Rochester. So I think for both sides, it's best they move on.
It is incredible. I mean, I'd mentioned this with Kesselring, like how positive this year was. And yet Levi, who it's really not that long ago, was considered like not a savior for the organization, but kind of like when he came up for, what was it, the 7 games a couple years ago when they were making that playoff push?
He almost got them in.
He almost got them there. Yeah. And then now it's, I mean, the following year, it doesn't count, but he ultimately let in like a half ice shot and goal at home. It's a disaster for him. You know, this year wasn't great. Rochester as a whole has not been the Rochester of the years past, but it was incredible that he really did become a bit forgotten. The change of GM, of course, kind of pushes that as well, because you're right, Adams, like that really seemed to be his guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, arguably for a couple of years, them not making moves in net was in part because Levi was the plan. And then all of a sudden he wasn't. And I'm with you. I think they're probably going to go just back with the same guys. Because outside of Hellebuck, I do wonder, like, where's anyone that's significantly better? Like, I watched the cup final, and it's Brandon Bussey against Carter Hart. Like that's how it ends.
Yeah. A guy claimed on waivers and a guy signed during the season. I mean, there aren't a ton of number one goalies, so to speak, out there. And the ones that are available possibly come with a high, high cost. So if you're the Sabres, I mean, you have Alex Lyon making $1.5 million, I believe, next year. I mean, one of the league's best values, in my opinion, in net. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who, you know, has a long-term deal, makes some good money. But, I mean, he's good enough for me. I mean, will he become that stud everyone envisioned, that number one someday? I'm not sure. But, I mean, he was very good last year for most of the year. In the playoffs, I mean, he had some rough moments. But, I mean, I still think he's – your best options are the three guys you have.
Yeah, I think that – I do wonder if it's going to be kind of like a contingency plan at this year, letting Lyon work with Luukkonen this year and then pretty much setting up Colton Ellis to kind of take the track that was once meant for Levi.
Possibly.
In a way of – now, okay, now you'll split the time with Luukkonen, and we go from there. It is going to be fascinating to see what they do with this offseason, because there's so many directions that they can go in. There's so many things that we're now talking about every day, now somehow linked to the blue line of all things. But ask me Monday if we're talking primarily about the blue line, and I would have called everyone a liar.
I mean, to be fair, Mirko was always like a trade piece. If they made a big trade, there was always a chance we got back to the blue line.
All of a sudden, we might be shifting to Mirko might have to become the untouchable one because he's the only defensive prospect that they have.
He's a big-time one first-round pick, and there good chance he's in Rochester next year. So he sort of replaces Hellenius as the guy we're all paying attention to in Rochester.
And it's funny. This is what happens with good teams where prospects are in play. The prospect pipeline almost runs out because everyone graduates.
Yep.
I mean, you know, Oslin, Constance, Hellenius is going to graduate. There's some other guys in there. I'm probably
Cooley graduated to start
Yuri
this Cooley year.
Yeah, already graduated. So that's what happens. And you trade draft picks and you don't take a ton of guys, and the pipeline kind of runs out because you're going for it. And that's good. And if you're a Sabres fan, I mean, this is fun. Talking about go for it mode and, you know, crazy moves and moves that they believe could put them over the top. I mean, it should be a very fun offseason and one people here haven't experienced in a long time.
And you mentioned go for it mode, and the Atlantic Division has become a little bit of a buzzsaw. It kind of eats each other at this point.
Yeah.
Five representatives for the postseason, three of which were within the NHL's top five in the standings, and none of them make it to the Stanley Cup final, as a matter of fact. But Buffalo, Montreal, Tampa's the one that, you know, they're the holdover. I think Boston is, you know, they're still an aging roster. They're probably going to, they might be the team that I think tapers off the most. But Toronto is gearing up to try to get back into it.
Mm-hmm.
Florida is going to be a team with a healthy Sasha Barkov. You don't want to count them out. though, what do they do at goaltender with Bobrovsky's interesting contract demands?
I saw that. Reportedly. I don't think he's going to get it. But.
Why? What
love
happened?
That he's asking. Why the ambition?
Why, Bill? What happened? But it's Detroit's the one that like is now the constant disappointment in the room because Buffalo got through, and then there's Ottawa, a team that stormed their way into the postseason and then go away in a whimper in four games.
Right.
But it's a division that you never know what's going to happen next all of a sudden. And you mentioned the Sabres, the win now, the how fun that's going to be. But how tough is it when you have to look at a division like the Atlantic Division where it is becoming a bit of a buzzsaw? You have four teams that hit 100 points this year. It's not a very common thing, and yet they're consistently the division that is kind of being the power. And this year broke, what, 9 years in a row that an Atlantic Division team is the Stanley Cup representative from the East. And one of those years, there's technically two of them in Tampa, Montreal.
Well, that's right. Yeah, it is. I mean, it is the toughest division in hockey, maybe the craziest too, just like you say. And we thought, you know, we talk about the Sabres. I mean, Detroit. I mean, Detroit now owns the longest drought, right? Hard to believe. Yep. And we thought Detroit was going to break through this year, long before we thought the Sabres would, and they blew it. And we didn't think Toronto was going to fall off as much. And so, I mean, you can make a case for every team, basically. I mean, Boston, we didn't think was going to be good, but they were still pretty good, and they got in, and Ottawa got in again. So, I mean, this is, I mean, the Sabres trying to maneuver through this division, I mean, they're going to get these teams best every night, and they play them now. I think every team's four times now with the new schedule. It's going to be it's a gauntlet for them, and it's going to be interesting to see how they respond to these different rivals they have, because they did very well with it this past year, but they could still have a very good, like Derek was saying, they could still have a very good season, have over 100 points, and they could finish third in the division. So.
I mean, Boston's the first wild card with 100.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Even then, you could have 100 points, and we're a wild card team.
So they have their work cut out for them to stay at the top of the division because, I mean, there's no margin for error.
And on that, and last thing, because I don't want to take up too much of your time, Bill, but Alex Tuch, I think we've all now hit the point, the reports are almost unanimous, he's probably hitting the open market.
Right.
You don't want them to trade Byram. How do you feel about them probably losing Tuch?
I mean, it's going to be a big, big hit, and they don't have – there's no one that can move in and replace them. Obviously, you have Ostlund and Helenius. They're centers. They're young. I mean, they have pretty good two-way game, but you can't expect them at age 20, 21, whatever, 22, to move in and replace that offense and play that mature game consistently. If they lose Alex Tuch, and it certainly looks like they might, I think you have to go out and try to get a top six forward that can give you 25, 30 goals and a dependable two-way game, and that's no easy task to find top six forwards capable of scoring 30 goals. So if he leaves, it's a big, big hit. And he's a heart and soul guy, too. We talk about how good he is. I mean, he's a guy that's loved being here, brought it consistently most nights. It's not going to be easy to replace him, and that moves him down a peg, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Bill Hoppe here on the Western Hotline covering the Sabres for the Times-Herald. Bill, thanks so much for coming in here on a Friday. You didn't even call in. You came in.
That's right.
And, I mean, it's one of those things where we appreciate that you're able to jump in, take the time, and literally waltz on over here to the studio so we can just hang out, talk some hockey.
It was fun, guys. Thank you for having me. I love doing it in person. There's a different vibe, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. 803-0550, the number to call. Thoughts on the rumors around Bo Byram, Alex Tuch, everything with the Sabres offseason, and of course also as well. It is game day. United States taking on Australia in the World Cup at 3 o'clock. We'll get through more of that when we come back here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Our Sabres beat reporter, Paul Hamilton. I said we're going to keep you on speed dial, Paul, and we got another report here, and we're piecing things together on Bo Byram. The Sabres, of course, earlier in the week traded away Michael Kesselring, and now we kind of get on a Byram trade watch. The report is that multiple teams calling the Sabres about Byram, and you were there, locker clean out, when he's asked about signing long-term. I think Yarmo wanted to maybe get him signed long-term. The question now gets to, is he even really open to that, and what should the Sabres do about it? So, good morning.
Good morning.
And we'll keep you on speed dial. But, you know, just kind of watching this play out, Paul, where do you kind of land?
Yeah, Kekalainen definitely wants to sign him long-term. You know what? Let's rewind back to last summer, you know, before the two-year contract. We were saying the same exact things. Bo Byram likes his teammates. He likes Buffalo. It has nothing to do with the Sabres and nothing to do with his teammate. Well, it has a little to do with the Sabres, but not that the Sabres are a bad organization. It's that the Sabres have Rasmus Dahlin and Owen Power. So Bo Byram, who was the fourth overall pick in his draft, feels that he can be a number one defenseman somewhere and wants to be a number one defenseman somewhere. And he doesn't see a lane for that happening in Buffalo, nor should he, because there is no lane for that in Buffalo, unless Rasmus Dahlin were to be traded, and that's we don't think is happening. So it's really the same scenario we talked about last summer. But last summer, he was still 2 years away from unrestricted free agency. So, you know, Bo Byram's like, yeah, you guys have control over my rights for 2 years, and I'll honor that. You know, it's not like he hates playing here. He likes playing here. But, you know, and he also has an agent who does encourage his clients to go to unrestricted free agency. That's Darren Ferris. So, you know, it just seems like it's the same thing that we talked about last year. The only difference is there's only one more year before he is an unrestricted free agent. And it could, you know, turn into what it turned into with Reinhart, where they just say, we're not signing, you know, and we're gonna go to free agency and do it that way. Now you say, well, okay, if that's been said, what do you do? Because that really limits what kind of trade you can get. Because, you know, the team you're trading to probably isn't going to be able to sign him. What you have to do is find out, who are the teams that are interested in making Bo Byram that number one defenseman, where maybe he'd be willing to do what Toronto seems to be doing this morning with Radish and do a sign and trade, where maybe you can then, you know, get a decent trade for him, because, you know, right now he could get an 8-year deal from the Sabres. The Sabres could sign him and then trade him. So in that case, you find out what are the teams that are willing to do that. What are they willing to pay him? And is he willing? Is that the team he wants to go to if he were an unrestricted free agent? So it seems like maybe that's the way you're going to have to do this. Otherwise, it's just going to be, you know, and this sign and trade is different than Radish's, because Radish doesn't have any more time left. He becomes an unrestricted free agency. Byram, you can get a better trade than the Leafs or than Tampa's going to get for Radish, because there's still one more year left on his contract. So I think that's the way you're going to have to go about it here, to get a better trade for him and maybe find that place that he wants to play in and find that team that is willing to make him that number one defenseman. There are teams out there, I'm sure. That was, you know, what Frank Saravella was talking today, and I would agree with that. There are teams out there that would be willing to do that for a young defenseman who seems to be up and coming, getting better every year. So, it's going to be a really hard trade if they don't have something set up with another team that he's willing to sign with and is willing to get the status that he's looking for.
And, Paul, I feel like because of all that, as you lay it out, I don't know that the Sabres will feel like any deal stuff, we have to do this, because he's got value to them for the next year. And if they lose him for nothing, like we've seen in Yarmo's past with, was it Panarin and Bobrovsky? Like, mm-hmm. He tried to win, and they left, and he took his medicine. Like, all right, fine. I'm, you know, winning still matters. And I feel like with Byram, if he does not get moved, it would not surprise me. It just means that no one wants to pay a fair price, and Yarmo thinks, let's go win in 2026.
Yeah, and this also, I think, gives us more insight on Kesselring, that, you know, that maybe Yarmo wasn't sold on him. That, and a lot of it could have been mental. You know, is he mentally prepared to play in a market like Buffalo, a hockey market, where you're going to get criticized and you're going to get praised also. And, you know, can he handle that? He kind of exhibited that maybe he can't. So, because if, you know, Yarmouth knows what the conversations have been with Byram and his agent. So, you know, that Kesselring, if Byram were to be traded, now he has a lane to be a top four defenseman with the Buffalo Sabres, which is what they had acquired him for. But does he have the capacity mentally to be able to handle playing in a market? Some guys can't. You know, I don't want to use New York compared to Buffalo, but, you know, the Yankees are a great example. How many players have become a Yankee and become awful baseball players, but were great baseball players before they came and were great baseball players after they left? They just couldn't handle that particular situation. So a hockey market situation maybe just isn't for Kesselring because, as I said, he would be – because they really don't have a replacement for Byram. If they trade him, that would be something that Yarmo would have to work on.
What should they want, Paul, if they were to move Byram?
Well, they're not going to get much if it's not a sign and trade because he's going to the market. And if he's going to the market and you're the other team,
Yeah. You're
basically doing what Jeremy just suggested. You're going to get him for a year. And if you feel that, okay, that's worth it, it's like a trade deadline deal.
Right, which is often – right, you're paying the rental price, which often can be future pieces.
Right, future pieces. Jeremy, you talked about examples. Well, Alex Tuch is an example too. I mean, he might become a rental, you know, if he leaves Buffalo. I mean, Buffalo didn't want to trade him or look to trade him, and I agree with that decision. I think they needed Tuch in their playoff run, and I think there was more value in having him with the Sabres throughout the run to get to the playoffs and in the playoffs than whatever futures you would have gotten to trade him to somewhere else to be a rental. So that could be a scenario with Byram. Maybe you don't worry about it for another year, and you keep him for this year, and the chips fall the way may, and he might become a Buffalo rental instead of a rental that you get from somebody else.
Do you think, Paul, that this could change anything about their situation with Alex Tuch? Like, any money that you would have been earmarking for Byram in the future, I know this year his number would have been locked in, but if you trade him, that'd be $6 million that is off. But more so for the future, like, do you feel like their attitude on Tuch or their offer really more so could change? Because if Byram's not signing, then that'd be more money available long term than maybe they thought they were going to have.
You know, Joe, I've been wondering if they've been playing chicken the whole time. You know, where it's, all right, who's going to blink first? Knowing that if we have to blink, we will. Mm-hmm. But we don't have to yet. It's only June 19th. So, you know, that could be possibly what's happening here. Who knows? Steven Stamkos signed on June 29th before free agency started. Brock Besser signed 30 minutes after he went to free agency. Now, he lost the opportunity to get an 8-year deal by doing that, but he went back to the Vancouver Canucks 30 minutes after free agency started. So, you know, I'm not 100% convinced that these two teams are playing chicken with each other, and maybe there is a deal to be made. It's just not to be made on June 19th. Because I just blows my mind if that figure that's been out there, $8.5 million, I can't fathom how the Sabres think that's a fair deal for Alex Tuch.
Paul Hamilton joining us on the Western Hotline as we gear up for, well, the draft next week. And we've seen plenty of movement in the NHL, plenty of trades already. It's a sign and trade that Tampa and Toronto just struck. Like, I don't know, Paul, you said they're playing chicken. I guess you could also start to talk to other teams about Alex Tuch and talk to Tuch's agent where he would sign, because, like, sign and trade could be something that just kind of pops out of nowhere the way that it just did for Radish.
Yeah, it could, but, it, you know, what I'm reading is, you know, all Tampa's going to get is a lower round pick.
Right. Which makes me wonder, right. I said to Joe in the break, why would you do that if you're Tampa? If you're getting a late round pick and you're helping Toronto's salary cap.
In your division.
Right.
Why, yeah, that's weird.
Why do that? Like, no, you go ahead and sign him for 60.
Or they look at it this way. Toronto's going to sign him anyway.
Yeah.
So if Toronto's going to sign him anyway, they're getting him one way or the other, so we might as well get a low-round pick out of it.
I guess that's the right question. Would you rather have a low, I guess what the low-round pick is?
Or squeeze their cap another $1 million.
Right, make Toronto have to pay $9.5 million instead of $8.5 million.
And I guess with the cap going up, that million is a little bit easier to take no matter what. But still, you know, late-round pick.
Radish, by the way, is like a weird one, Paul. Like, he's tough to compare to Byram, right? Because not only was he going to UFA now, he's 5 years older, and this was the first year that he was that player. Like, he was a 17-minute-a-night defenseman the year before the season he just had.
Right, and it was a one-year thing. Sometimes it is. You know, Toronto may get a dud. You don't know, because sometimes players just have that one season. You know, that they just go crazy, and then they go back to being what they were. You know, Montour is having the seasons that he had. What, maybe two? I don't have my computer in front of me, but he had one great year in Florida, and I think one pretty good year. But he kind of has come back.
Offensively, he had a 73-point season, and then his second highest is 41.
Right.
So, yeah.
So that's a little bit example where he went to Florida and just went nuts and was one of the best defensemen in the league and then kind of came back a little bit. So you don't know what you're getting in that type of a situation.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Thanks, Paul.
Take care, guys.
We'll talk next week, the draft next week. More trades likely, a lot of action. Paul, brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this.
Pierre LeBrun just tweeted about a free agent that – I hadn't felt the need to think about before this Byram stuff, but maybe just an ounce of it now. John Carlson is probably now the best defenseman on the market, and LeBrun just tweeted that he's definitely going to get something around $10 million per year on a two-year deal somewhere.
Hmm.
He is 36. He is coming off a 60-point season where he played 23 minutes a night and is still very good, but he is old.
Yeah. Hmm. All right. Add him to the list. 803-0550.
I mean, they're going to need to replace Byram if he's traded.
If he's traded. I would. I don't want to sit here and say, like, I'll bet.
Paul's right. Like, there's nobody on the roster right now that is going into that top four.
No, that's right. And I would not be eager to move him. But
unless you want
to
put Metsa up there.
The Metsiah?
The Metsiah.
Don't sleep on the Metsiah. When we return, one fan base in the World Cup is marking its territory in the city that they've been visiting. And it's hilarious. I did not know that these people do this as tradition. It's coming up next.